Today we spend time with French film director Jean Renoir, whose influence on the art of film is indisputable with iconic films such as Grand Illusion from 1933, Rules of the Game 1939, Diary of a Chambermaid 1946, and The River 1951. Jean Renoir was born in Paris in 1894 into an artistic family, the second son of master impressionist painter Pierre-Auguste Renoir. In 1924, he directed his first silent film, Backbiters, and his creative life was decided. Perhaps the American public is not familiar with him or his films, as they never won an Academy Award and were never box office hits in America. In any case, in 1960, toward the end of Renoir's film career, Dale Miner interviewed him in the studios of Pacifica Station WBAI in New York City. Here is a very animated, opinionated, and charming Jean Renoir.
Mr. Renoir, we're very pleased and honored to have you with us today. You're the creator of over 30 films, I believe. This includes The Grand Illusion, which was cited by the critics at the 1958 Brussels International Exhibition as one of the world's five greatest films. Now, of course, every film critic, I suppose, has his favorite insofar as your work is concerned, but what is your favorite, your personally favorite film?
Well, I don't know. I'm not too much interested in films I made. I'm more interested in films I'm planning to do in the future.
I see.
The future interests me more than the past. But if I think of... As a matter of fact, I think I made more than 30 films. I don't remember how many, but I started to work in the silent days,
mm-hmm.
and after all, in those days, you were piling up films very quickly. Now, I think probably there are two pictures which play a great role in my ideas today, and which change a great deal about my behavior, even in life. One is probably La Règle du Jeu, The Rules of the Game.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is probably The River.
And how was this? The River was especially
Well,
important.
The River, you know, I'm essentially a Westerner. I was born in Paris. I'm living in America. I have a home in Hollywood. That means I'm typically a man of the West. The River brought me to India. And mm-hmm. in India, I learned how to know people who are not Westerners, who are just the opposite of Westerners. And I believe I learned a great deal with them. And having to shoot a picture, I had, of course, to observe human beings. I'm very much interested in landscapes, in architecture, but much more in human beings. I should even confess that when I'm shooting a picture, I don't look too much at landscapes and architecture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to be more interested in human beings' behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And in The River, I was in contact with a part of humanity which I didn't know at all. I knew only what I had read in books. As a matter of fact, my ideas were not too far away from what I found. I knew, for instance, that the whole Western idea about the mystery of India. You know, here people always talk mm-hmm. about mysterious India. I had the idea that India wasn't at all mysterious, that it was the most open country, the most clear country in the world, and it is. Indians are very easy to understand, and probably, well, it's very easy for them to understand us. The mystery lies in the fact that so many people believe only in the outside, not in the inside. And when they see people eating differently, eating, let's say, in mango leaves instead of
mm-hmm.
eating in dishes, and wearing saris instead of May Company dresses, well, they believe that it is mysterious, but it isn't. After all, the reactions of people are the same about anywhere in the world.
The mysterious equates with the unfamiliar.
Yes, and people love to dress up themselves in a strange way. They believe
mm-hmm.
that the costume makes the man. It is why so many people play a part during their whole life. They built a house, and the house will look like a ranch, and they will play the rancher. There's no rancher at all. They are a clerk in a bank, but they play the rancher. And just because of the fact that they have a very wide brim hat, they believe that they are hunters. Yesterday, the film was shown here at the university, and after the show, I had a very happy moment because many Indians attended the show, and that was like being in India again. I was younger of 10 years. I went 10 years back toward my past. Mm-hmm. And one of them told me something which made me extremely happy. He told me, well, after seeing your picture, I think I like my own country better.
How do you direct a film? What is your approach, basically, to directing a film?
The main thing to me is to try to make no difference among the different parts of the making of a film. I mean, not to consider that a film is a watermelon and you cut it to bits and you eat each bit apart. Mm-hmm. Even one bit is eaten by some collaborator, the other bit by another one. Mm-hmm. You have the bit for the actors, the bit for the writers, the bit for the editor, the cutter. I don't believe in that. I believe that a film is a whole, that a film is something which does exist completely by itself, exactly like the world, mm-hmm. exactly like a human being. Mm-hmm. Well, you cannot cut your finger and have pains only at the tip of your finger. If you cut your finger, well, you are ill, you have to lie down, and you are ill in your entire body. It is the same thing with a film. It's why I don't believe that, for instance, the fact of writing a screenplay should be different from the direction of the actors. It is why I think that a film is in the making from the beginning, from the first conception of the story up to the end. May I say, even after the end, I believe that even the audience is a part of the making of a picture. Strangely enough, some films are good with certain audiences and they mm-hmm. are bad mm-hmm. with other audiences. To me, this kind of trading business, this strange kind of very close collaboration with everybody, including the audience, is essential, is the making of a film. It's why my first theory about the making of film is to try to see everything all together.
Well, what you're saying is essentially that making a film is an artistic creation. This, well, unfortunately, isn't a common approach among filmmakers.
Well, thank you very much. I'm trying to make it an artistic creation. That doesn't mean that I always succeed, because there are so many things against you. And another thing, human spirit is weak, and sometimes you are confronted by problems you don't understand. And then there is a great danger. It is to solve the problems with clichés. Clichés are so handy. Mm-hmm. You open a little drawer in your imagination and you find the answers to everything.
Mm-hmm. You have a particular, a particularly natural approach to actors and acting.
Well, I believe that there is a strange mystery in the making of a film or in the making of anything in the world. May I say, even in the making of of an apple pie. In the making of anything which is human, there is a strange thing. There is a mixture of influence of a responsible person. In the filmmaking, let's call this person the director or the director-writer or the producer, anything you want. But it happens that if this man, who is supposed to be the boss, acts like a tyrant, he gets nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It happens that all the other ones, the actor, the cutter, the cameraman, must not only feel free, but must feel that they are also the author of the whole job. And that's not complex. I believe either it comes or it doesn't come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have good crews, good collaborators, or bad ones, or you are yourself a good collaborator, or you are a bad one. Sometimes the same man during his life can be bad and good in different jobs. But to me, the perfect making of a film is when the situation is the following one. Everyone believes that he's creating. is creating the whole film, not only the part he's responsible for. Mm-hmm. The sound man, for instance, believes that he's making the film, that everything depends on the sound, and is influencing the dialogue. He comes, he tells me, you know, Jean, I'm very sorry, but you know, your line here, it doesn't sound natural, it sounds silly. You should change it, and I have to change it, because probably it's true. And the actor, you know, after all, I believe that the
Does this apply to the actor, to the individual actor?
Yes, you know, many directors direct the following way. They say, look at me, I'm going to act the scene. And they do act the scene, even if the scene is acted, should be acted by a girl. They play the part of the lover, the part of the sweetheart, the part of the mother. And they say to the actor, you saw me, now you just do the same. Well, to me, that's very wrong. Because what could be the result? Supposing even that the result is very good, the result would be a picture acted by one man. Mm-hmm. The 10 parts would be, why to have 10 actors in this mm-hmm. case? I believe the method should be just the opposite. The method would be to help each actor to find his own personality and mm-hmm. to have his own personality so definite, so different from the other ones that we have a kind of puzzle, a kind of rich mixture. A mixture, of course, but mm-hmm. a rich one, and where each element remains absolutely different from the other ones.
But from the point of view of the individual actor, should this person conceive of himself as the creator of the whole, as do other elements in the making of a film, or should he conceive of himself as much as possible as the role he's playing?
You know, in life, nothing is black and nothing is white.
Right, right.
You know, when I arrived in the army, in the French army, I was in the cavalry and I was very mm-hmm. young. And the first thing I learned is something extremely important, which was very important for all the rest of my life. I learned that there are no white horses and no black horses. There are only horses in between. The horse you believe white is just pale gray. And mm-hmm. and the horse you believe black is just dark gray, and that's all. Well, may I say that the ideal thing would be an actor who would have the feeling of the whole show, of the whole play, who would know all the parts of all the other actors, but of course giving more importance to his own part and trying to become the character which is written in the play, because that's very important. You know, another thing, because that's also very mysterious. We must help an actor to find his own personality, but mm-hmm. we must also ask the actor to forget his own personality mm-hmm. and to become the personality which is written in the script. I believe that the explanation of the job of an actor is something extremely difficult to do. Many people did it. Louis Jouvet did it very well in The Private of the Comedian. Mm-hmm. And myself, I wrote many plays about that. For instance, my play, The Golden Coach, is just about that. What is life? What mm-hmm. is acting? Mm-hmm. Is acting real or mm-hmm. false? Is life real or false? Well, they are big questions and fascinating mm-hmm. questions. Well, I believe that there is never an answer which is entirely yes or entirely no. The job of a director is to establish a kind of balance among all the feelings, the ambitions, the reluctances. He must, out of many personalities, and trying to make each personality stronger, he must make something which looks like unity, like a whole.
Have you ever filmed or considered filming some of Pirandello's work?
Yes, I did. But, you know, I'm quite reluctant about masterpieces. I shouldn't mm-hmm. say so after talking about The River. The novel, The River, is a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for The River, I proceeded in a different way. I wrote to Miss Roma Garden, the author of the book, and I told her, your book is marvelous. It's a masterpiece. But if we want to make a picture, we should conceive it differently. We must keep the spirit of the book, the mood of the book. But about the facts, even some characters. They should be different. In other words, we should load ourselves with the spirit of your book, then forget it and write something else.
I see.
And she did. She came with me, and we sat down around the table, and we, from scratch, we wrote A New River, a river which was a film and not a novel. Now, with Pirandello, it's difficult to do it since he's dead. And may I say that I'm impressed by great works. In any case, it's dangerous to do a film after a great book.
Yes.
I don't know many good films after great books. For instance, about my picture, The Golden Coach, I was very careful to avoid Mary May all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to the sources where Mary May took his own story.
I see.
You know, this Peru stories mm-hmm. of a girl and the viceroy. Well, I went back to probably the same sources where Mary May found his story. And I found, I must say, a different story. I must say the real story was very different from Mary May and from myself. In the real story, the girl was not so young as it is in my play, I must say, and the viceroy was not too old as it is in my play, that's true. But that was a very normal love affair, just at least astonishing for the Spanish court, since the girl was half Indian, and the viceroy married her, took her to Spain, and they had 12 children, and that's all.
Well, I see your point. You can't create if you're making a copy.
No. You know, after all, what is interesting in life, it is creation. Mm. Anywhere. May I go back to the apple pie? Well, if the cook doesn't create his apple pie, you have no apple pie. You have an apple pie which looks like an industrial apple pie, like a routine apple pie. But a very personal apple pie can be something as wonderful as a good film or a good play. And I believe that creation is absolutely necessary. It's the only thing which interests us. Mm. Why do we read books? Why do we look at a painting by, let's say, Van Gogh? It is because we have the whole entire personality of Van Gogh on the canvas.
Mm-hmm.
It is because it is a creation. Now, it would be wrong to believe that you cannot do a creation without using some other stuff. After all, Shakespeare did it all the time. But he did it very often with some stuff which wasn't so good.
Mm-hmm.
He took some second-rate Italian writers who had written little love stories like Romeo and Juliet, and, out of that he made a masterpieces. But you also have the fact of good things used for good things. For instance...
These are rare, though.
It's more rare, but may I tell you about Mozart's Figaro's Wedding? After all, the Figaro's Wedding by Beaumarchais is a masterpiece. The Mozart Opera, I believe the book was written by Da Ponte, is also a masterpiece, even more a masterpiece than the original. I believe there is no rule. There is one rule. You know, Mozart and Da Ponte in the own Figaro changed the story a great deal. They did what I did with Rumour Garden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they took the general idea, but they started from scratch. As a matter of fact, to use a general idea sometimes is good. It saves you time.
Yeah.
Because if you have to, and artistically, about really the aim, the end, it doesn't count so much. When you arrive at the end of a good thing, the story is forgotten. The story means nothing.
Mm-hmm.
What remains, there are a few personal context between the characters and the audience. After all, what we should try to do is to establish a conversation, a friendly conversation. You know, the fact that now a big movie will be with a big budget means that you have to be more careful.
Mm-hmm.
When you have to spend only a little money, well, you are not afraid of being audacious to try new things, to suggest new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have behind you a budget of $2 or $3 million, well, you are afraid, you are careful. You have to be successful. And when you have to be successful, you are weak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cook with the apple pie.
Of course.
Yes, if you cannot try a new kind of flour or a new way to cut the apples, well, we are lost. We must try. We must try all the time.
It does also seem like there's a strong tendency for several reasons for budget and quality to move in opposite directions, don't you think?
Yes, that's a mystery. Well, I believe that perhaps the basic reason is that you have to please too many people, too many different publics. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, the old system, which was you have to please to one man or a group of men, let's say Michelangelo had to please the Pope Julius II, one man. Well, he made masterpieces. Probably you are more free when you have to please only one man than when you have to please 10 million of men.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, the further out you go, the further you spread out, the further down you have to go.
Yes.
It seems to me that increasing technical resources to give the director of both the play and the movie, for that matter, a temptation to use gimmicks rather than to use his imagination.
Well, that's the history of art. Under technical perfection is extremely dangerous. Mm-hmm. We know it if we consider, for instance, the history of tapestry. The first tapestries were masterpieces. Recently, I was in France, in Angers, where you have some of the oldest tapestries in the world. That's the Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. It's simply extraordinary. It's a dream. You could look at them for days and days and months and months. Then, later on, the technique of tapestry was perfectioned, was better. And men found ways for interweaving the threads, to have all the shades, may I say, to copy reality. Mm-hmm. And that was the end of the art of tapestry. A modern tapestry so close to reality is not interesting. Nobody wants it. You cannot sell it. There are no more works of art. Well, it's the same thing with any form of art, and it is certainly the same thing with the movies. The first movies in Hollywood, the movies by Mack Sennett, for instance, mm-hmm. were all masterpieces. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that a single movie was done around 1914, let's say up to 1922 or 3, which wasn't a masterpiece for some reason. And I'm absolutely sure that the technical difficulties was a great help. Any man with a little bit of imagination had to use his imagination and to be a great director. He had to be a great director. If not, he couldn't direct at all. He had to go home and to make apple pies, and that's all.
Well, there wasn't anything to copy at that time.
There was not anything to copy. Now, and there is another thing. I believe that what we love, what every human being loves, is mystery. You know, we have 100 fairy tales about that, and they're all true. Mm-hmm. You know the fairy tales when there is a very mysterious dish in the middle of a table, and you must not open the lid of the dish. And finally, you open the lid of the dish, and there's a little mouse, and the little mouse ran away. And that's the end of the whole thing. Well, that's true. Uh-huh. That's true. The more we approach to copy of nature, the less we feel the mystery of nature. The more we understand that water is not water, but is a combination of oxygen and hydrogen. And that's less interesting than, let's say, than a heavy rain in a tropical landscape. And I believe that our ability now to copy nature is just chasing away art from our movies.
Or perhaps it's simply that not our ability to copy nature, but our inability to go beyond what we've analyzed so far.
Well, you are right. You know, that means that what is happening with the movies is what happened, let's say, with the art of novel writing. Mm-hmm. Since printing became perfect, and since grammar and languages became more rich, mm-hmm. now a modern language owns, 100,000 words. In the beginning, a language used maybe 200 words, and that's all. Well, it was easier to write a masterpiece with 200 words than with 100,000 words. Facility is against art. And I'm absolutely convinced that the same It's the same case in the movies as in literature. We must have talent now, and that's very difficult. And it's why the result of movie making are more and more divided. Mm. One side you have junk, on the other side you have good things. And the good things will be commercially as difficult as good books. Mm-hmm. I will always remember a say by a good friend of mine. He was a wonderful man. Unfortunately, he died several years ago. He was the head of the RKO Studios in Hollywood, and that was during the war. Charlie Kerner was his mm-hmm. name. And one day he told me, Jean, you know, today, any picture makes money, even the good ones.
You are listening to a 1960 interview with French film director Jean Renoir, one of the masters of the art of cinema. We'll return to this classic recording in a moment.